Continue our study of Sefer Shmuel, Aleph. We are continuing in Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. And we are up to Pasuk Mem Aleph. And what had taken place right at the tail end of where we were last week was that David and Goliath seemed to be heading towards their famous showdown, that Goliath had been asking for someone from the side of the Israelites to come and fight him. He was representing the Plishtim, and David volunteered. And just one tie-in from last time, we had mentioned that David, first of all, he tried on the armor. Shaul offered him his own armor, and David declined. And David's choice of weapon seemed to be quite simple. And that the Pasuk says, if you just go back to Pasuk Mem for a moment, Vayikach maklo biado, David took his staff, his stick, a walking stick in his hand, not really such a powerful weapon. Vayivchar lo chamisha chalukei avanim min hanachal. He took five smooth stones from the brook. Vayasim oso b'chli haroim, and he put it into his bag, asher lo that he had, uviyalka, and he had a slingshot in his hand, and that's Vayigash el Plishti. That's how he started approaching the Plishti. So the Radak cites a fascinating medrash on why he took five stones. And we didn't mention this last time, so I thought we would just start with this. Because as we're going to see, he really only needed one stone to accomplish his task. What was the significance in taking five? So the Medrash says that he took five stones to represent five individuals, one being God. So I don't want to say five individuals.
Where is the five?
So in verse 40, in Pasuk Mem, Chamisha Chalukei Avanim, five smooth stones. So the Medrash says, why five? To represent the following five entities. One is God. The second is Aaron HaKohen, Aaron from, Moshe's brother Aaron, and the three Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So, it's already sounding like an interesting medrash to say Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov always represents the Jewish people. That's not foreign to us. And to say that Goliath was disgracing the Jewish people, so that makes sense. He was disgracing God. How the one that clearly raises the flag a little bit is Aaron. Why Aaron out of all characters in Tanakh in our history? So the Medrash mentions the idea of the concept of Goel Hadam. Goel Hadam is someone who is the one who can take revenge when a family member is killed by someone. So the Goel Hadam is the one who would take revenge on behalf of the victim. And there's a concept even in Halacha that if a person is killed by accident, that there could be a Goel Hadam. A person kills by accident, he needs to be nervous that someone might try to avenge the act. And therefore, that's why he runs to the Ir Miklat, to the city of refuge. So who was killed in Aaron's family? So this Medrash says that Goliath was around during the original war that we saw with the Plishtim in Perek Dalet. And it was Goliath who killed Chafni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli, who were Kohanim. We learned that. We learned that they were killed. We didn't know who killed them. This Medrash is filling in the gap, saying that it was Goliath. And so years later, it is David acting on behalf of Aaron, in a sense, the father of all Kohanim, to take revenge against Goliath. And that's how this Medrash includes Aaron. And the fact that it includes Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov has to do with the fact that Goliath was disgracing the Jewish people. The fact that one stone represented God represents the fact that he was, making fun and disgracing the Jewish people who are Hashem's people. So that's a medrash about five. Why the significant number of five? Again, you could take the practical approach that he just took five because he thought he might need five. The Medrash just kind of elaborates.
At that time, wasn't it like, didn't they say that it was God's will to kill those two boys?
Correct. Correct, but that, you know, it didn't have to be this person to do it. The person who carries out the punishment of God also makes a free will choice to do so, and therefore can be punished to do so. You know, so when the Jews have to be punished and the first Beis Hamikdash had to be destroyed, still Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babel, he made a personal choice to be the one to step up to the plate as opposed to, you know, letting someone else do that. And so there's the whole cosmic, you know, checks and balances we'll let the Lord work out. So here David is approaching and he's armed with what he's armed with. Pasuk Mem Aleph is the new pasuk for today. Vayelech haplishti, and the plishti, meaning Goliath, goes forward. Holech, he's going, v'karev al David, coming close to David. Vayish nosei atzina lefanav, and the man, his attendant, who was holding his shield, went before him. Pasuk Mem Beis. Vayabet haplishti, and the plishti, Goliath, he sees. He gazes, vayira as David, and he sees his adversary. He sees the one chosen for his duel. And the immediate reaction upon seeing him is vayiv zehu. He derides him. He disgraces him. He's about to throw insult after insult at David after just seeing him. Why? Because how does he sizes up David very quickly. Kihayanar. David was a lad. And again, we describe the fact that he was, when we do the math, he seems to be 28 years old, which usually is older than a nar. But maybe he was a young-looking 28 years old. But he had, and it's also the appearance, and it's also relative to the other soldiers. So we don't know what the average soldier necessarily was looking like. David looked like a lad. Admoni, he was of red complexion. Im yefei mar'eh, he was kind of handsome. And so it wasn't, you know, Goliath was sitting there thinking to himself, again, we're not sure how high the intelligence level was in Goliath, but, you know, I've been coming out here for 40 days threatening the Jewish people, and this is what they send? Like, they couldn't even send someone that looks like he's going to give me a run for my money? This is a joke. Pasuk Mem Gimel. Vayomer haplishti, so Goliath says, El David to David, Hakelev anochi? Rhetorically saying, do you think I'm a dog? Ki ata ba elai b'maklos, that you come towards me with a stick? I mean, you call that a weapon? You're holding a stick. What, you think I'm a dog that you're going to get me to go somewhere because you're going to hit me with a stick? Meanwhile, we know that Goliath is holding a spear, that we heard that the weight of the spear was something that none of us could pick up if we worked all together. Vayikalel haplishti, and the plishti began to curse. A klala is a curse. So Goliath began to curse as David. He began to curse David, Belohav, through means of his gods, meaning, saying, and see, this David just fills in the gap. He would say, you know, Elohe haplishtim yargecha, the gods of the plishtim shall kill you. He started insulting him or cursing him via means of his gods, lowercase g. Vayom pasuk mem dalid, vayom haplishti al David. He continues to talk to David. Goliath is talking, he's constantly talking. L'chayilai, come to me. Ve'etna es bisarcha la'of hashamayim u'lehemas hasadeh. And I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the animals of the field. Basically saying, I'm gonna make you mince meat. I'm gonna destroy you, and you're just gonna be. I'll leave your carcass to be eaten by the animals. So Rashi and others cite a statement of Chazal that it was in this statement that Goliath began to give himself away, and that David began to realize that I have a decent chance. How so? There are birds that unfortunately will eat even human flesh. But if there's, God forbid, a body lying out there in the wild, there are birds that would come and eat the meat of a person. When it comes to behemoths, when it comes to animals, so we classify our animals in two ways. They're domesticated animals and they're wild animals. Domesticated animals are farm animals, like cows and like goats and sheep. And wild animals are, you know, in New Rochelle, you would say a wild animal is a deer. A wild animal is coyotes, wild animal, wolves, lions, tigers, bears, oh my. So Chazal had the tradition, and again, I'm not an animal person, but not that I don't like them, but I don't know a lot about them, that domesticated animals would not eat from a human carcass that's lying in a field. Wild animals would. And here, Goliath uses the term for domesticated animals. Ula behemas hasada. The domesticated animals of the field. And David saw that he's a little confused. David saw that Goliath is confused, and David took that as a sign that God is on his side. That Goliath is not thinking straight, and that perhaps he'll be able to get the edge on him, or perhaps he's already heading in towards a downfall, and that what registered in David's mind. Now, perhaps one of the reasons why Chazal are so sensitive to this is because we're about to see that after Goliath finished his speech, David has his own speech. And you'll notice when David kind of gives it back to Goliath, he doesn't take it, he gives it back, the insults and the threats. When David says, I'm going to leave your carcass to be eaten, David uses the correct phrase of saying, Ofa Shamayim and Chayas Hasadeh. Chaya are the wild animals of the field that would, unfortunately, you never want to think of such a case, that would go ahead and eat a carcass. So I imagine, I don't know for sure, but I imagine that's the sensitivity that Chazal had, seeing the way David said it kind of the right way. And that is a phrase that's used elsewhere in Tanakh, kind of like a threat, saying, well, leave your body for the wild beasts to consume, as opposed to being, you know, buried with respect. And contrasting how David said it, quote-unquote, correctly, and how Goliath made the mistake. So Goliath finished his speech, and David picks up Pasuk Memhei. Vayomer David el haplishti, David said to the plishti, meaning Goliath, Ata bo elai, becherev, ubechanis, ubechidon. You are coming towards me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin. Just using the translation. Anyone have a different? What's your translation on chidon?
Spear, javelin.
Javelin. Okay. Any in that one different translation? Javelin. It says. Okay. Because we hadn't known about that. So he apparently has a javelin also. I'm not exactly sure what the difference between a spear and a javelin is. I always thought javelins are what you use when you're on the horse, and that's when they're going against each other. But we're clearly not. We didn't bring any of our experts in biblical warfare. Va'anochi ba'elecha b'shem Hashem tzvakos, and I am coming to you in the name of God, Lord of hosts, Elokei ma'arachos Yisrael, the God of the battlefront of Israel, the God of the army of Israel, asher cheirafta, that you have ridiculed, that you have disgraced. Hayom hazeh, on this day, yisagercha Hashem biyadi. The word sagar usually means to close. Here the Metzudas Sion says it's to deliver. It's a language of the Metzudas Sion says of misira, of delivering. And it's but maybe there's a association to close something is to like kind of finish it off, to close the door, you shut it. Today is the day. Right, especially after literally 40 plus days of you disgracing the Jewish people, today is the day where God is going to deliver you in my hand. V'kisicha, I'm going to strike you down, meaning to kill you. Vasirosi Ashroshka Me'alecha, I'm going to sever your head from upon you. V'nasati feger machane plishtim hayom hazeh, and I will give over the corpses of the camps of the plishtim on this day, lo'of ha'shamayim lo'chayas ha'sadeh, to the birds of the sky and to the wild beasts, lo'chayas ha'aretz, the wild beasts of the land. V'yeidu chol ha'aretz, and the entire earth will know, ki yesh Elokim li'Yisrael, that there is a God to the Jews. So again, he's telling Golias, you're coming with sword and spear, you're putting all of your hope in your physical might, and I'm coming to present to you as a representative of the one true God, the God of Israel. And in essence, it doesn't make a difference what I'm bringing to the battlefield. Once I'm representing God and he's on my side, I can win with anything. And he continues to send that message. Pasuk Mem Zayin. V'yedu kol kahal hazeh, and all of this congregation will know, ki lo b'cherev uv'chanis Yehoshia Hashem. It's not through sword and spear that God causes salvation. Ki l'Hashem hamilchama, for unto God is war, is battle. V'nasan eschem b'yadeinu, and he shall deliver you into our hands. So there seems to be a multiple faceted approach to his speech. The number one, he's addressing Golias, and he's telling Golias, I'm going to put you in your place. I'm going to kill you. That is something that, there's going to be a ripple effect that the entire Plishti army is going to be heavily affected. Once you go down, they're going to go down. This is something that's important, not just to destroy you and to kill your army, but it's important. The yedu kol haaretz. Kol haaretz means the surrounding lands, the surrounding countries, the world in that region needed to know that there's a God to the Israelites, that you can't quote unquote start up with them when you want. And not only that, not only is there an element of kind of what we would call a kiddush Hashem to the non-Jewish world, but his last point, which is maybe the most important, and really when you learn the topic of Kiddush Hashem, really making Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem, like when we're small children and we're going on a field trip, our teachers always tell us we need to make a Kiddush Hashem. The real aspect of Kiddush and Chil Hashem is in front of other Jews, not non-Jews. And here his last statement is that the greatest presentation is going to be made to the Kahal Hazeh. Kahal Hazeh is referring to this congregation, meaning the Israelite army is going to receive a chizuk, is going to receive a strength in their emuna, that it's all up to God. It's all up to the faith. It's all up to the faith of God, which is, you know, when you're thinking about, again, you can't say for sure that David has this in mind, but in the recent times of Shaul leading the army, and the two errors that Shaul makes in not following the commandment of Hashem is not putting following Hashem in the total forefront of the king's mind. And here we have David, who you and I, we're well aware that he's the next king. No one else knows that. And here you have David saying a speech. We don't know. Can his soldiers hear him when he's given? Can the fellow Israelite soldiers hear this speech? Presumably they can, he's not that far. Secondly, even if they can't hear his speech, his example and him striking down Goliath in such a way is going to cause a Kiddush Hashem to the rest of the Israelite army, and they're going to learn that lesson through David. So in the back of their minds, David is, and this perhaps, I don't even know if you want to use the word perhaps, but when we said that David was not told what to do. Once he's anointed as king, he's not told what to do. It seems to be so clear from the Psukim that the natural events had to happen in order to create David as king. And this is one of those moments where David is kind of stepping in. He's not going to be acting like king for a while, but he's definitely building his resume of someone who could be a successful king. Pasuk Memches, V'haya, he come haplishti. So it happened when the Plishti got up, Vayelach vayikrav lekras David, and he went further and got closer towards David. Vayimaher David vayaret samaracha lekras aplishti. So now David goes quickly, and David is running towards the battlefront to greet the plishti, towards Goliath. They're heading for their meat. Pasuk mem tes. Vayishlach David es yado el hakeli. David sends his hand towards his sack. Vayikach misham even, and he takes one stone from there. Vayikala, and he slings it. He uses his slingshot to sling one stone. Vayach esaplishti el mitzcho, and it struck Goliath in his forehead. Presumably there was a small space. We were already told about the armor and the helmet that Goliath wore. There must have been a small space somewhere on the forehead. And David was able to hit that spot. Vatitba ha'evin b'mitzcho. And the stone penetrated his forehead. Much like we would say in our modern day, a bullet would go ahead and penetrate. If someone got a gunshot wound to the head, the bullet would penetrate the head. Normally, when we think of a slingshot, so normally we don't think of a, we understand that a stone could do damage, but we don't necessarily think of the sheer force. And again, I'm really not an expert in anything. So when I say I'm not an expert in military, where I'm also not an expert in physics. So I don't know if we could imagine a person actually slinging a stone and it would penetrate a person's head. This clearly is of the miraculous nature that David uses a slingshot and accomplishes having the stone penetrate Goliath's head and go through the forehead, which means it goes into the brain. Vayipol al panav arza, and Goliath fell on his face. Goliath fell down to the ground immediately.
It wasn't a pebble, remember?
It was a stone.
Stones can be pretty big.
If
right.
It could go on a slingshot, it couldn't be too bad.
And you have to, it has to be the force.
Yeah.
To extend the idea that clearly there was a miracle involved, the Pasuk, and most of the Mefarshim pick up on this, the Pasuk says, Vayipol al panav arza. He falls on his face. If you get shot in the forehead, usually, physics, this I know, you would fall backwards. The fact that the Pasuk says he falls forwards, so Mefarshim explained that it was a miracle, but it was to show more disgrace, that the mouth that Goliath used to defame and disgrace the Jewish people was now going to be full of dust. And Goliath, it seems to be dead on impact. That this stone wound, you know, gunshot wound to the head, it kills him. Pasuk nun. Vayechazak David mina plishti bekela ubeeven. This is almost like the narrator telling us. David overpowered the plishti with a kela and an even, with a slingshot and a stone. Vayachas a plishti, and he struck the plishti. Vayim misehu, and he killed him. Meaning just with that one stone from that one slingshot. The cheriv ain biyad David. He didn't have a sword. He didn't. We know that he didn't even bring the sword to the battlefield, to the actual duel. All he had was a slingshot. He had a stick, but he used the slingshot. Pasuk nun aleph. Vayarat David. So David ran. Vayamud el haplishti. He stood right next to the body of Goliath. Vayikach escharbo, and he took his sword, meaning Goliath's sword. Vayishlefa mitara, and he removed it from its sheath. Vayimos sehu. The way to read that is that he had already caused his death, meaning with the slingshot. Now with the sword, vayichras ba es rosho. But he took the sword and he severed the head of Goliath. Himes Giboram. Everybody's watching this. Everyone sees the giant of a man against the little, skinny, small, whatever, in comparison, Israelite soldier. So the Plishtim see that their strongman, their Gibor, is dead. Vayanusu, they immediately begin to run. I mean, the shock of Goliath losing, it put them into such a panic that if this is what could happen to Goliath, if the underdog could totally take the favorite, they're in trouble. And immediately, at least the way the psukim make it sound, immediately the Israelites capitalize. Pasuk Nun Beis. Vayukuma Anshe Yisrael v'Yehuda. So the men of Yisrael and Yehuda who had gathered, who had been waiting there, who had been on the battlefront for more than 40 days, they quickly get up. Vayariu, they blow the trumpets, the army sounds. Vayirdefu es haplishtim, and they begin to chase the plishtim down, to attack them, go on the offensive. Aboachagai, until the approach of a certain valley. Vaad Shaare Ekron, they made it to the gates of Ekron. Vayiplu chalalei plishtim bederech sha'arim, and they were plishti corpses lying there on the roads, on the road to Sha'arim. Vaad Gas, until Gas, Vaad Ekron, until Ekron. Gas and Ekron remain essential plishti cities. They were able to push back the plishtim into the plishti territory. Pasuk Nun Gimel. Vayeshuvu v'nei Yisrael midlok achor yaplishtim. And the B'nai Yisrael, the Israelite army, returned from pursuing. Midlok, Mitzidos Tzion says, is the same word as mirdof, to chase after. So they returned from chasing after the plishtim. Vayeshosu es machanehem, and now they went back to the plishti camp that was just left there, and they took the spoils. They plundered the plishti camps. Pasuk Nun Dalet. Vayikach David es rosh haplishti. David took the head of the plishti, meaning the head of Goliath. Vayiviehu Yerushalayim, and he brought it eventually to Yerushalayim. Vyeskelov sam ba'ahlo, and his weapons he put in his tent. Now the fact that it mentions Yerushalayim is rather interesting, because Yerushalayim doesn't really exist yet as anything. Yerushalayim is not really in Jewish control in the sense it's not a Jewish town yet. So why would he bring the head to Yerushalayim? So we're going to see the pasuk will say he first showed it to Shaul. And some of the other Rishonim explained that he kind of took it around. he took it around the country to kind of show everyone the great miracle that Hashem had performed. And what he did was, the Radak quotes that the city of Nov, Ir HaKohanim, had a nickname of Yerushalayim. Nov was where the Mishkan was at this time. We're going to see it later on when David is on his run away from Shaul. He ends up in Nov, Ir HaKohanim, and an important event takes place there. So Nov was where the Mishkan was after the Mishkan was destroyed. After Shiloh was destroyed, the Mishkan moved to Nov, Ir HaKohanim. So this Yerushalayim is talking about the Mishkan, which would make sense, because Yerushalayim, again, doesn't have significance as of yet. When it says that he places Kalev in his tent, so the Mefarshim explained that was everything except for the sword of Goliath. The sword of Goliath got placed with the Aron. The Aron, which was, or got placed in the, near the Mishkan, which was in the city of, with this Nov, Ir HaKohanim. So when you put it all together, it sounds like it makes sense. And that was something we actually had heard before, that taking the spoils of war and bringing it to your house of worship, that was technically common. Just like the Plishtim brought the Aron to their temple, of the temple of Dagon, back in Perek Hey, chapter 5. Here we see David depositing the sword with the Mishkan, and we'll actually see it's not the last time that David is going to be with this sword. Now here, the parak concludes in a rather strange way. Because if I ask you right now, what's the relationship between David and Shaul? So what would you tell me? Very good. Right? Shaul was sad before this whole episode took place. It said that the spirit of Hashem had left him. They went on a little bit of a search, or at least one of the attendants says, I know a guy, and they brought David, and David began to play the music, and it raised the spirits of Shaul, and so Shaul knows very well that this is that who David ben Yishai is. Then we come to these psukim, pasuk nunhe, as the parak concludes. V'cherosh Shaul as David. When Shaul saw David, yotze likras aplishti, go out to greet, go out towards the aplishti, go out to do battle with Goliath. Omer el Avner saratzava, he turned to Avner, his general, the officer of his army, his general, Avner, who we've heard of and we'll hear more from. Ben mi ze hanar, Avner. Who is this guy? Whose son is this nar, is this lad? Vayomer Avner. Avner says, "Chenafshecha Hamelech im yadati." By your life, O king, I do not know. Now, why Avner gets so dramatic? I don't know. Right? He could have just said, "My master, Adoni, lo yadea." I don't know. He gets almost like. So maybe it's somewhat, and we'll try to explain this as best we can, but maybe it's somewhat in response to, you know, when we, lahavdil, elef alfe avdalos, to kind of have all separations, we now live in an age of texting. People text each other on their phones. My students text more than they speak. They could be sitting in the same room with each other and they'll text each other rather than talk to each other. When you get a text, one of the biggest problems in that form of communication is you don't know the tone of the person writing the text. There, you know, you could say, "You're late for dinner," and you can mean, "You're late for dinner, you're late for dinner," you know, and there you just don't know. So Lahavdil, we're reading here this text, and it just sounds like Shaul says, Ben mi ze hanar. But maybe it was kind of forceful. Maybe it was with some type of anger. And so Avner responds in such a like defensive kind of protective kind of way. By your life, O king, I don't know. I'm not sure, but it just seems a little odd for Avner to answer in such a way.
But didn't David dress him up before he went to fight him?
Shaul,
dress him up?
So,
didn't he say who he was?
How do we understand this? So there are a couple approaches. No, some say that if there was one good approach, there wouldn't be multiple approaches. So you might like one more than like the other. You might see faults. It may just be a combination. So, the Metzuda says that Shaul's mental condition caused him to forget. That Shaul's, we clearly see that he's not always of sound mind.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that he wasn't sure.
But who knew who he was first, right? Like after he...
Correct. There's another approach that Shaul couldn't believe that it was David who actually went out to do battle. That after David refused the armor, Shaul thought there's no way that David would go and be successful. Now that he sees that someone was successful, he's thinking to himself, there's no way that that's actually David. it must be someone else. Who is that someone else? Because David would have never been successful. Just odds, right? Just think, you know, just kind of thinking about it. The other idea is that he may have known when he says Ben Mi Zehanar, it doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't know who David is. He's saying Ben Mi Zeh, who does this person come from? And I know it's David. Who exactly does David come from? Meaning, David just did something that no one else was able to do. Does he come from great warriors? Is this like, could this have been predicted? Could this have been expected? And the Gemara in Yevamos seems to launch into a great discussion of when Shaul asks Ben Mizeh, Shaul was beginning to get nervous about David. The fact that David was so successful is raised a flag in the mind of Shaul. Because remember, the people don't know everything, but Shaul knows he's going to be removed as king. So perhaps, this seems like a pretty good candidate to remove him as king, to be the next king. He was just successful against Goliath. When he asks the question, Ben Mi Zehanar, he wants to know the lineage. Because the tradition has it that only certain descendants from the tribe of Yehuda were going to become the king. And so what he was questioning was, Ben Mi Zeh, is this someone I really need to be worried about? Or is he just happened, right? Everyone knew Yishai was from Beis Lechem. If you're from Beis Lechem, that means you're from the tribe of Judah. That's just, everyone lived.
It also says here, I cannot tell. It doesn't say, I don't know. Because it doesn't say, lo yadati. It says, im yadati. So,
I don't know.
He wasn't saying he doesn't know.
So what's the significance of that?
He was saying, he didn't want to tell him. I don't know why. He didn't want to tell him where he was from. Maybe because he knew that was going to be the next king.
Right, maybe.
Proper place. He didn't
want to
be the one.
So according to this approach in the Gemara, Shaul's not saying, I don't know who David is. I just need to know who David is. Meaning, I need to know. And he was informed that David actually comes from the right lineage. As we see it actually, you know, we're 2 weeks away from Shavuos. So when we read Megillas Rus, Megillah ends with the lineage of David. And you can go from Yehuda to David, very, very easily. And David goes through the right son. It goes through Peretz, as opposed to Zerach. The Gemara here also mentions that at that moment, they tried to, at the same time that in a sense, David's lineage was being built up, that he's coming from the right approach, it was also brought, and Doeg, the infamous Doeg, was the one who brought up that David also had not necessarily the best lineage, because he came from Rus. And Rus was from the tribe of Moab, the nation of Moab. And the assumption was that a Moabite is not allowed to enter into Klal Yisrael. What Doeg wasn't aware of is that the halacha was set way back when, in the time of Rus, the halacha was set that when the Torah says a Moabite is not welcome into the Jewish people, that only applies to a Moavi, not a Moaviyah. It only applies to a man from Moab, not a female from Moab. And so while a man would not be able to join, Rus was welcome to join, and her progeny is considered to be fine and good. So when Avner says, I don't know, Pasuk Nun Vav, Vayomer HaMelech, the Melech says, Sha'al Ata Ben Mi Zeh Ha'elem. Find out who is this son. Who is this son of? And it refers to David here as an olem. An olem gets translated as a youth. Now why? And that's how the Mitzvah Sion just translates the word elem as nar, as a a synonym for a nar, for a lad. Question: Why would you switch? Why would you switch? So Rashi says, Rashi picks up on this and says that just in Pasuk Nun Hey, he referred to him, Shaul himself referred to him as a nar, and now he refers to him as an olam. So Rashi says, halacha zu
nis...
Rashi nun vav. Rashi says, halacha zu nis alma mimeka. Tse v'shal b'veis ha-medrash. The halacha, and perhaps this is the halacha about the whether or not the son of a Moaviyah is accepted, that halacha became nit'alim. Nit'alim also means hidden. So that's why he changes the language. What's important for us, Orthodox Jews, and just Jews in general, is that in Tanakh, the word olem means a youth. Olem is for a man. So how would you say it for a female?
Alma.
Like nar is to na'ara. So olem is to alma. And so if you look throughout Tanakh, anytime you have a Jewish translation of the word alma, they translate it as a young maiden, a youth, a female youth. There's a pasuk, in a famous pasuk, in the seventh parak of the book of Yeshaya, talking about an alma that becomes pregnant and eventually gives birth to a son who's named Immanuel, who will be called Immanuel. And if you look in your translation, the same translation I gave out, JPS 1917, they translate an alma in chapter 7 of Yeshaya as a young maiden, the same way we would. If you look in the King James edition of the Bible, they translate alma as a virgin, which is totally wrong. Because we have, you can search through Tanakh, when the Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim wants to refer to a girl as a virgin, we have a word for that. It's called betulah, besula. And it's used many places, numerous places in Tanakh. It'll use the word just besula or habesula, the young girl who is also a virgin. And for whatever reason, the pasuk wants to highlight the fact that she is a virgin. When you have an agenda to prove that a virgin can become pregnant, so you want to translate that word alma as a virgin when it's just not the case. But if you're a regular person reading an English only edition of a Bible, why would you question it? It's only when you go back and you learn Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, you learn that there are different words. There's a basula and there's an alma. And we have those words. Those are non-threatening words. One means a virgin, one means a young girl. Sometimes you want to highlight the fact that she's a virgin. Sometimes you want to highlight, all right, a case of a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry. We just had it in last week's parsha. A Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry a Basula. So how do you have to say that word. You have to say, he can only marry a Basula. So you have to say the word Basula. So that's just, it's something fascinating that, you know, again, the best way to ever learn a text is to always go back to the original of the text. That's always the most authentic. Whenever you're trusting a translation, so a translation is only as good as the one who is translating it for you. So I may have mentioned that in the past, but it's fascinating, and I don't know too many pieces of information like that. So I like to share that. And thank God we live in a free country where you can actually say what you want and not get, even if it's recorded, you won't get censored and things of that nature. So we're makir tov to Hashem and to this country. Pasuk Nun Zion. Ukishuv David mehakos es haplishti. When David returned from striking down the plishti, vayikacho so Avner. So Avner took him. Vayivieu lifnei Shaul, and he brought him before Shaul. Verosh haplishti biado, and the head of the plishti, the head of Goliath, was still in his hand. Vayomer elav Shaul. And Shaul said to him, Ben mi ata hanar. Who are you? Where do you come from? Vayomer David, and David responded back, Ben Avdecha Yishai Beis Halachmi. I'm the son, Ben Avdecha Yishai, the son of your servant Yishai, who comes from Beis Lachem. With the last statement of David to Shaul, in my humble opinion, the Mitzuda's approach of saying that Shaul was kind of confused, that seems to be highlighted, in a sense that here they're face to face. This is the same David that had already appeased him and played the music and the pasuk had it was in the last perek, but the pasuk already had said Pasuk had said towards the end of Perek Tazayin, Vayavod David El Shaul, and David came to Shaul, Vayamod Lefanav, he stood in front of him, Vayehavehu Me'od, he loved him very much. And here he is, standing face to face to him, and he's asking who he is. Mm-hmm. So that approach, in my mind, that approach, now you could take the other approaches still, to say that he wasn't saying, who are you? He was asking where you come from. Now, how David's answer satisfies that? Well, he gives him just basic information. He doesn't say anything more than, "My father's name is Yishai, and he comes from Beis Lachem." But what seems to be clear, and we'll make it a little more clear next time, is that the seeds are being planted for Shaul to be suspect of David, and the fact that. That if everyone else in Klal Yisrael was supposed to recognize that this was a great miracle coming from Hashem, so Shaul would also recognize that this is a great miracle coming from Hashem. And why would this individual be chosen to be the vehicle for a great miracle to come from Hashem? There must be something special and unique for this person. I'm currently king. I am going to be disposed of king. My son is not going to be the one chosen as king. There's going to have to be someone else, another special individual. The same way that I was recently recognized as a special individual amongst the tribes, there must be another special individual. Plus the fact that Shaul was aware, just like you and I are aware, that the position of leadership had to come from the tribe of Yehuda. Shaul is also aware. He knows Pesukim and Chumash like we do. He knew them better than we do. He knows that it's going to be disposed. He knows that he's going to leave being king. He knows that the tribe of Binyamin should not have necessarily become king. So just by his thought process, he would think that the next candidate should come from Yehuda. And all of a sudden, he has in his midst a young, special member of the tribe of Yehuda, doing great things for the name of God in front of the whole people. We understand why he begins to be suspect. And we'll see, there are going to be some more small signs that kind of convince Shaul, and mixed with Shaul's mental condition, we'll see how Shaul reacts. So, Bezrashem, next time, we will pick up with Perek Yudches. He's also going to